himself and others to the Lord. How did he carry himself when he was abounding? I'll tell you, we're going to talk about abasement here in just a moment. But in abounding, sometimes the Lord allows us and tests us through the trying of our faith and through trials and those sorts of things. But I'll tell you, as I've said before, a greater testing is prosperity. Because when we go through a trial, we have nowhere to turn but to God. But in our prosperity, it seems as though we turn to everywhere but God. David, at this point, I want you to think about, we don't have time really to give you the entire backstory, but understand, he had just beaten the giant Goliath. He had been promised the daughter of the king and great riches, and everybody knew who David was, and he had just a couple of days, just 2 days before, had been watching and tending the sheep, and we don't know how long it was before that his father wouldn't even call him in to see the prophet to see who was going to be the next king or to be sanctified with oil. I don't think that Samuel had said exactly what that was for at the time, but understand that he was living just an average, everyday life, and now he was thrust into the spotlight of the entire nation, and he handled it with humility. When God allows us to see a victory or two, we need to be very careful of that snare called pride. You know, we have a way of telling ourselves that we're actually better than we are. Do not rely on self-assessment to tell you how good you are. You will always over-assess. As a matter of fact, I read just this last week or the week before that, it was an article talking about how people think that they're smarter than the people they work with. And it was overestimated about 60% of the time that whether they were or not, they didn't do any metric. It's just the thought that we think we're smarter than everybody else. And the problem is not only that we think that we're smarter than the people we're working with or the people that we're married to. The problem is when we start thinking that we're smarter than God is and we know better than he does. David gives us a great example. If you want to live a life that is worth living in the times of abundance like you have right now, like we have in America, don't forget God and handle it with humility. What about an abasement? Look at verse 14. David behaved himself wisely in all his ways, and the Lord was with him. And when Saul saw that he behaved himself very wisely, he was afraid of him. I'm sorry, I want you to go to... I put the wrong verse on there. It's going to take me just a second to find it. Where they're singing, and Saul takes him. I thought it was in verse 13 or 14. Well, it says that Saul had made him the commander over thousands. Verses 6 and 7? No, it's later on. I really apologize. I wrote the wrong verse down. What is it? Yes. It says, therefore, Saul removed from him, he's talking about he moved away from him, and made him his captain over 1,000, and he went out and came in before the people. So verse 6 and 7 says, listen, Saul took him, and he put him as the captain of the war over everybody. And he was sending him out. It says David would come and he'd go, and he went out and he'd come in. What is he saying? These are battles. These are our campaigns that he's going out to fight. And what is Saul hoping through all this? Why is it that he's not given his daughter to marry yet? He's hoping David's going to be killed. And so at this time then Saul sees that David is brave and he's a great warrior and he's excelling in this. And he says, okay, well, I don't want the heart of the people to go towards David. So rather than making him the general, I'm going to make him a commander. And rather than being over the entire army, in a sense, be sitting down with the joint chiefs of staff, I'm going to just make him not a corporal, but a commander of a regiment. And so he went from being the general to a lieutenant. Generally speaking, in army and warfare, I'll just tell you, if you know anything about the army, that's a demotion. That's a prime opportunity for David to grow bitter against Saul. What are you doing? Listen, I've won you victory after victory after victory. And now you're taking me from being the general and commander down to a lowly lieutenant? How many times have you said in your life these words, that's not what? Fair. We overassess what's fair. We think to ourselves, what is best for me? We don't think about what is best for God's plan. We think, boy, if I were in charge, I would do this about me. You don't see any bitterness walk into the life of David. Not through any of the ordeals that he's going through do we ever even sense a hint of bitterness. I wonder why that is. I think because he had a right perspective about who God is. And in relation to that, he saw himself as who he is. You see, what happens when we say that's not fair? What we're saying is, I know better than God's plan for my life. What we're saying is, God, I know you may have a plan, but I have a better plan because it promotes me. Now, praise the Lord when you get a promotion and God puts you in charge of something. But if he chooses to take that away, boy, don't let bitterness soak in or seep in to your life. Paul put it this way, I know both how to be abased and how to abound everywhere, and in all things I am instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. And that is when we get to Philippians 1:13. I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me. When you get demoted, do you need the strength of Christ to help you to cope with that? Yeah, absolutely. The same as you would when you're promoted to be able to handle the responsibilities. See, the key is not ever relying on your own strength to start off with. The truth of the matter is you don't deserve a promotion. You don't deserve a raise. You say, I've worked hard. Listen, let God give it to you. But when you think that you have earned it, rather than that God is going to bless you with something, you say, what's the difference? The difference is perspective. You say, listen, I went out and I worked hard and I labored and I did all the things that I needed to do in order to get a promotion. Who gave you that strength to get out of bed? Who gave you that health and that life to be able to go out and do those things? You must ultimately always chase your success back to God. We see him abounding. We see him abasing. I want you to look at verse 30. It says, and the princes of the Philistines went forth, and it came to pass after they went forth that David behaved himself more wisely than all the servants of Saul, so that his name was much set by. David, through the providence of God, became a far more popular king than Saul. He just became more popular than King Saul. And ultimately, David did marry into Saul's family. What happened? Saul married off his oldest daughter. That really sent a message to the rest of the kingdom. This is what I think about David. And so what happened was Saul's youngest daughter, Michal, looked in and fell in love with David. And so Saul thinks, well, here's another opportunity that I can get to kill David. And so what he did is he said, if you bring me 100 foreskins of the Philistines, I'll marry off my youngest daughter to you. What was his plan? David, I want you to go out and get killed. And so what did David do? He went and got 200. And he brought back, in a sense, the trophy, proving that it was not some helpless Jewish people that he had slaughtered. And so in that, he did that publicly, giving that back to Saul and backed Saul into the corner. And Saul had to acquiesce and give him Michal. And so now he's married into the family. But his actions were always honorable. He always chose to do right in these instances, in this story. I won't say David always chose to do right. You know better than that. See David's deportment. I want you to see his determination. Verses 10 through 13. And it came to pass on the morrow that the evil spirit from God came upon Saul, and he prophesied in the midst of the house. And David played with his hand, as at other times, and there was a javelin in Saul's hand. And Saul cast the javelin, for he said, I will smite David, even to the wall with it. And David avoided out of his presence, not once, but twice. And Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with him and was departed with him and was, the Lord was with him and was departed from Saul. Therefore, Saul removed him from him and made him his captain over 1,000, and he went out and came in before the people. Now, here's what I'm getting at. David could have easily quit. How many times have you just been chewed out by a boss or by someone, and you just say, I'm done? How many times have you ever had attempted murder attempted on you, and you say, okay, I'll be back to work tomorrow at 8 o'clock? You know what his determination was? His determination was to please the Lord at all costs. And so as he's in the court and Saul is having these fits of rage, David, in a sense, kind of has this mentality, oh, that's not really who Saul is, in this sense. He's saying, listen, that's not... And so only in Saul's heart are we given privy to the fact that he wants to murder David because of his insecurities. But David's willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. Now we get to that great verse in verse 10, that an evil spirit from God came upon Saul. What does that mean? Does that mean God was possessing him with a devil? No, not at all. Let's break it down just a little bit. The word spirit can be translated breath. This is, in a sense, a spirit, okay? But the word evil or harmful carries with it the idea of unpleasant or miserable or malignant, in a sense. And so what's happening is Saul is in this deep, just despairing, miserable, depressing, listen, conviction over his sin. He's never dealt with his sin. Can I tell you, if you read after Jay Adams very much, and I'm not a huge fan of his, although he does some great counseling things, but he has made a statement that said half of the people that are in institutions are there because of conviction of sin. They don't know how to deal with it. No one's ever told them how to get rid of the guilt that they're carrying around. Now, Christians know that we can go to God, but Saul has never dealt with that. And here he is having fits of rage and anger, and this thing is overtaking him. And in this thought, he thinks, okay, once and for all, I can take care of David. And he tries to smite him to the wall with a spear. And David escapes. I don't know too many people that would purpose in their heart to go back and do it all over again. And it says he escaped out of his presence twice. I don't think most of us, God is calling to surrender our lives for his service. And when I mean surrender, I mean give our lives like Jim Elliot or Nate Saint in some way to martyr our lives. But I'm afraid that the pendulum has swung so far. Listen, in the 60s and 70s, everything was about church and ministry and family came so far behind that there were families that were shipwrecked because people thought, listen, soul winning was more important than anything. Now listen, soul winning is important. Don't walk out of here and say, pastor said soul winning is not important. But the pendulum has swung so far now that we can't be inconvenienced to do anything that might take time away from family. Understand, there must be a balance. It can't be all ministry so that the family is shipwrecked, but listen, it can't be all family to where no ministry is accomplished. David was willing to hazard his life in order to accomplish God's will for his life. He said, if I can't do God's will, it's not worth living anyways. And if you want to live a life that is worth living, don't be afraid to inconvenience yourself to do something for God. In his worst moments, Saul is incredibly jealous and envious of David. They sing the song. I mean, they're coming back. And you understand, this is not just women that just kind of showed up and they're doing just a little shuffle or something like that. I believe these are choreographed dances that these Jewish people, I think, has been lost to history. We'll never know what it is, but it would have been well known in their culture of that day. And when they're coming in, I think that from what I've studied, it wasn't just all the ladies are singing. It's a kind of responsive singing. You'd have one side sing, and then you'd have the other, and they're all moving in this choreographed dance, and it was a great celebration when the men of war would come home. I mean, they're going to see their husbands and their fathers and their brothers, and it was a great time of celebration. And here they go, and they say, Saul has killed thousands. And Saul's thinking, man, they love me. It's great. This is wonderful. And then the other side is doing the dance, and they're coming in, and they say, but David has killed his 10,000s. And Saul's thinking, what was that? That's not what he wanted to hear. He wanted that verse, how great I am, to be sung by everybody. He had some major ego problems. David never asked him to sing that song to him. And I'm pretty sure he probably wasn't whistling the hymn later on when he was getting ready to get the spear thrown at him either, okay? But he wasn't something that he's holding over Saul's head. Aristotle wrote that an envious man feels pain at everyone else's success. How do you react when someone around you excels? Are you jealous of them? Well, I don't know how they could get that car. What are you saying? It's not fair because I didn't get a car. Well, I don't know why they got that promotion. What are you saying? It's not fair because I didn't get that promotion. You may not say this, I'm very jealous that that person got something that I didn't get. But your attitude and your thoughts will betray your heart. Very quickly, I want to just give you three ways that David lived a life worth living. Number one, David was surrendered. David was steadfast. And David was submissive. You see, when we do the things that are important to us, we attach value to something, we'll make time for it. And we'll either have a set of values that please us, or we'll have a set of values that pleases God. And sometimes they overlap. As you grow spiritually, God gives you the desire of your heart. What does that mean? You're desiring the things that He wants for you. Do you understand? It's not as though He says, okay, well, listen, you've been so good this far, I'll give you the real desire of your heart, and it's something wicked. God's never going to bless us with wickedness. But as we walk with Him, our heart's desire is to fulfill His will for our lives. And He says, I've been waiting for you to do what I've been wanting you to do. And so as you attach value, you determine the priorities in your life. When you say, you know what, I'm going to take time out, and I'm going to go to church on a Sunday night. I don't remember what the percentage is, but it's probably less than 30% of America is in a church tonight. What you've said is my relationship with God is important enough to be in a place where I can hear what He wants me to hear that night. You have determined or prioritized, and then you have acted on that priority. Do you see? What we believe is going to affect what we do. So David's living, and his priorities at this time in his life are what we could take a lesson from. At some point, David had determined to be faithful in spite of injury, in spite of the trouble or difficulty that he was experiencing in his life. And he made up his mind that he was going to be surrendered and steadfast and submissive, not only to God, but listen, to the king. It's easy for us to say, God, I'll do whatever you want me to do. And God has put an authority in your life, and that authority tells you to do something. He's like, I'm not doing that. But wait a second, if it's your authority, if it's your boss, if it's your dad, if it's somebody in authority, and they say, you must do this, guess what? That's God's will for your life. And we say, God, I'm willing to do whatever you want me to do as long as that person isn't the one telling me to do it. That would have been easy for David to say. God, you want me to be king? I'm there. Well, God did say, one day you're going to be king, David, but not yet. And right now, I have some things for you to do, and you're going to have to work under a fellow by the name of Saul, and he's a hard manager to work for. But I expect you to do your best for him regardless. That's great. That's great preaching when you say, yeah, I'm going to sell out to God. But when you talk about having to yield yourself to some other human being because it's a representative of God's authority, that makes it a lot tougher to swallow, but it's no less Bible than saying we need to surrender to God. We don't have time tonight, but I want you to remember David's deportment. How did he carry himself? I want you to remember his determination. And verses 17 through 23 gives us David's discernment. How Saul saw him, how he saw himself, how the nation saw him. But understand, he was walking with the Lord. And he had committed himself to doing what God wanted him to do. Boy, if he would have kept that same passion his entire life, his legacy would be even more incredible than it is today. I'd just like to ask you tonight, how do you carry yourself? David's deportment was one of whether he was abounding or abasing. His actions were that of humility and pleasing God. His determination was to do God's will, even if it was an inconvenience, even for him if it was life-threatening. What about you? What does it take you to stop from doing God's will in your life? An inconvenience? Some investment of time or resources? Or simply, it's just not fun enough? I hope it would be so much more to prevent you. Listen, I know I'm talking to a group of people that are in church on a Sunday night because you love the Lord. But don't lose that passion. Don't lose that desire or that drive to do God's will. And I think that if we can learn these just few principles, when we get to the end of our life, we're not going to look back and say, I wish I would have done more for God. We'll have said, Lord, it's not because of me, but it's because of your faithfulness. But we will have lived a life worth living. Don't live a life of vanity that's going to vanish, of things and chase things that are going to go away and just rust or corrupt themselves over time. But live a life that has purpose and meaning. And I promise you, when you get to that winter stage of life, you'll say, Lord, I'm not worthy, but you are. And I thank you for it. Let's pray together. Father, I thank you for your word. I thank you for the fun that we can have tonight, just in this, the tie competition and things like that. But, oh Lord, your word is so important. Your will in our lives is so important. I pray that you would help us to be, in a sense, introspective, to see how important it is in our lives to live a life worth living. Lord, are we chasing vanity? Are we chasing the wind? Or are we living a life that has purpose and meaning? Lord, when we're doing well, do we give you the credit? When we're abased, do we go to you for help? Father, are we willing to surrender, to submit ourselves under not just your authority, but the human authority that you've set over us?